It's always soccer in Philadelphia, even when the Sixers are playing in the playoffs. I'm always going to find time to talk about the beautiful game. And joining us from California on short notice to talk about the beautiful game, the only other person in the United States who has a landline, it's the Dalai Lama of soccer, Simon Allen. Simon, what's up, man?
Well, thank you so much. I did not know that the Sixers are in the playoffs. What are we doing talking about soccer?
Well, you know, it's always soccer in Philadelphia, even when basketball is going on. So this is a podcast for the people, and we always have to have our priorities straight, no matter what's going on. You know.
Of course, but if you told me about 10 seconds ago that it was the Sixers were a basketball team, I would have not known.
Well, now you know the Sixers are the basketball team, the Eagles are the football team out here. There's an ice hockey team that's not that good, and we have a baseball team that's a little bit better this year. And then you have the Philadelphia Union as well.
And so that's obviously the most awesome soccer team in all of the East Coast, possibly that area, the Philadelphia Union. You're absolutely right.
Well, I guess you got to watch them play against the LA Galaxy on the weekend, yeah?
I did, yeah.
What were your takeaways from the game, from the match?
Well, you know, let me be really, really honest. Like when I had to go to the game, and so that was part of my job. I had to go to the game, and on my Facebook page, I was like, you know, a penny saved not watching the Union is a penny earned.
Oh, that's harsh, man.
So, did you see that one? And it was like a vintage, Ben Franklin. And I didn't get, and so I got a lot of like private, you know, messages, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, but you know, and I was literally standing. Also about 10 feet away from Jim Curtin, pretty much about 50, 60 minutes of the whole game. And so I walked in there not really wanting to see this, and then watched it from a sort of over-the-shoulder view of the manager. And I thought to myself, and I'm a bit long-winded here, but I'm going to go around to this particular thing. Let's not talk about soccer for a second. Let's not talk about tactics for a second. But I'm asking you this question.
Mm-hmm.
What did you feel when you were watching this game? Like, what did it almost feel like to you when you were watching this match?
It felt like I was watching a mid-table team, like a mid-tier team, play against an upper-tier team.
Okay, but just take it a step back a bit, because I'm trying to see if there was a guy who I was working with, and he's an ex-MLS player, and I won't give you his name.
Mm-hmm.
But he said something to me that I was thinking, and I was kind of wondering, no, it can't be that. So the reason why I asked you, Kevin, is because I honestly thought that, this particular match was the Philadelphia Union coming into LA and saying to themselves, this game doesn't really matter. They're a Western Conference team. If we beat them, we beat them, which was not going to happen regardless. If we tie, we tie. If we lose, it doesn't really matter because it's not really a six-pointer. It's definitely a three-point loss. And it kind of felt like that. And the guy that I was working with said exactly the same thing. He said, yeah, it just doesn't seem like they're playing for, like they really wanted to win this. They're here on sort of, they know that this really, win or lose, it doesn't matter because they're not in the same conference. And I literally perked my ears up and went, that's how I see it. And I was so I'm questioning that now. Did you, now that I said that, do you see it now looking back? Like, these guys weren't really playing?
Yeah, maybe they're not really believing in themselves, which I guess you would think might be strange considering the fact that they had won three straight, you know, and they were coming in good form. They're playing well.
Were they three straight in the Eastern Conference, or was it varied?
No, it was Cincinnati, it was Columbus, and it was Jesus. Who was the other team they just beat? I can't even remember. I have Sixers brain right now. But yes, it was Dallas. It was Dallas.
Okay, so to me, I just thought, nah, man, this because I didn't see anything. You know what? I sometimes joke and I say, you know, I watch professional soccer, but I didn't see any professional players on the pitch. But I'm not gonna go that far with this particular. I just didn't see like any attempt to go above and beyond your playing ability, or you know, these boys came in here and went, we know we're gonna lose. It doesn't really matter.
Well, that's how I felt like the fan. That's how I felt. That's what I felt in the fan response, too. Like, a lot of people were just saying online afterwards, well, you don't expect to go out and beat the Galaxy in L.A. anyway. You know? Well, what kind of mentality is that?
Well, I saw it. Yeah. I saw it on the – I mean, like, I was there. I was like
– what kind of shit mentality is that?
You know, and I really got mad for about 10 seconds, and then I went, eh, you know, that's the name of the game. It's you know, we're in that world right now. We're in the Major League Soccer world where – it's not a, you know, an even schedule. It's not a balanced schedule. And sometimes you can go to the opposite conference, lose, and it won't really matter one iota that you lost, because you didn't lose against D.C. You didn't lose against, you know, Columbus. You didn't lose, you know, that's what I saw.
Well, we're starting with lowered expectations out here, you know, for sure. And I think that, like, you know, you have to convince yourself, you have to say to yourself, look, we are if we're going to be better than we have been, that has to start with us believing that we actually are better than we have been, you know? And I think they've gotten out on a good foot. You know, they won the three games in a row. They started 3-2-1. They were fourth place as recently as last week. And I felt like that was big, because you've seen this team have really, really bad starts over the years. And then they spend half of the summer just trying to claw back to relevance, you know? So I thought maybe that would give them a different kind of boost this weekend, but yeah, I don't know. I wasn't really feeling it. It did seem like they changed the lineup a little bit. They put Marco Fabian up there at striker. He had to come off on the non-contact injury like 20 minutes in. Brendan Aaronson was still on the field. Even with that, it did feel kind of flat to me, you know?
And I didn't see any sort of, I'm not going to use the word passion, because that's not the right, because sometimes you can't see it. But I didn't see any urgency from the bench. I didn't see anything.
Yeah, and Jim's not a guy. I mean, I'm sure you've watched him coach before when he's been out there before, but he's not very demonstrative on the field,
right?
You know, and whether it means anything or whether it results in anything tangible or not, even just making it look like you're a little bit more annoyed or engaged or pissed off than you really are, sometimes that sells people on the idea that you're a little bit more in it, you know.
I'll give him credit, you know, he's a professional guy, but, like, I want to see someone, you know, telling the ref, hey, man, that, you know, that's a bloody foul, you know, F you know, and then, or shouting at a player when you know that, you know, the odds are against you that you are going to win this particular match.
Yeah.
And honestly, let me be sort of a pundit here and play down the middle, sort of middle of the road kind of stuff. The Philadelphia Union got out of L.A. with a win, then we wouldn't really be talking about, like, well, you know, the bad starts, good starts over the past couple of years. It was like, yo, man, they beat a possible MLS final, you know, final contender.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And that, I thought, like, man, you go in there and you smack that giant, and then you go into the rest of the season going, well, we kicked these guys' butts.
Yeah, it does make you wonder where the juice was, you know, considering the fact that they were playing well. You thought they might have a little bit more, like, confidence or attitude or assertiveness coming into it. Yeah, no, it's a good point. I think we spent half of the time afterwards arguing. I got in a fight with somebody on Twitter about whether Zlatan got a couple good whistles in that game. There was the first goal where he went up and climbed over Trusty, and then the second, the penalty they gave him when he got undercut by Wagner. I mean, basically, this is the dumb exercise here. The LA Galaxy fans thought it was clean. The Union fans thought they were, you know, it was a foul. So, what did you see from your neutral Dalai Lama summit?
I mean, let's be honest. Both those incidences, I was actually like in near the corner flag. You know what I mean? So I was really close to it, but I didn't notice anything being done wrong by either party. Now, let me be honest. Trusty looked lost in the back lineup.
Yeah, he did a little bit.
To the point when Bedoya was coming in way too many diagonals coming in to save any kind of situation that was going on in front of Blake. It was ridiculous. So Trusty, Wait a second. So are you saying that it was like more of like he? Zlatan sort of jumped, you know, using Trusty push-off point or something like that?
Yeah, I think he was a little early. But I also think that Austin Trusty probably didn't do himself any favors by getting a little lost there by losing him and detaching from him, you know, because if you're glued to the guy, it doesn't matter, you know, and you're jumping at the same time, then it's, he can't climb over you if you're latched onto him, you know?
And also Zlatan is about two heads bigger than him anyway. So
yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Eventually, if he moves up first, he's going to put his hands down. So I didn't really see anything wrong with that. And I'm not saying it because I'm an LA Galaxy fan or anything like that. I didn't see that. And you know, you got to understand that. You're not going to win those regardless. I'm sorry.
Right.
And you're not going to. And by the way, the sheer balls of Jim Curtin to put a 20-year-old homegrown American player to mark Zlatan Ibrahimovic. You know, I would have said Alejandro Bedoya, you just be his shadow. You know what I mean? Like that right there, I think would have been. I think like that wasn't a matchup that wasn't going to be faring well for Austin.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, Simon. I'll give you, and this is going to be terrible radio or terrible podcasting because I'm going to try to explain something that people can't see. Okay, so I want people to use their imagination. Zlatan is 6'5", right?
He
weighs more than 200 pounds or more than that, right? When you have a big guy like him, like Jan Koller, like even Harry Kane's a bigger dude, you know. When you have those guys go up, they make it look easier because they don't have as far to go. You know, it's much easier for them to climb because there's less space for them to climb, you know?
Yeah.
Therefore, it makes it look less like they are actually climbing, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm, you know, I'm 5'5", and I'm going up against a 6'1" defender, in order for me to get an advantage over there, I have to make it a lot more obvious in the way I leverage myself, you know?
Yeah.
But my problem with that is that just because Zlatan is bigger and it's easier for him to get up, I don't think that means that he's not also leveraging himself a little bit. And the problem that I have, I think, is that when I was refereeing, normally the way that we would call these things is that the key was that you would blow the whistle when you saw the extension from the arms. You know, like when you would see the full extent of the arm pushing out and the elbow totally extended. Zlatan, I think, was pushing down a little bit, so he didn't get the full extension. I think that's probably why they gave him the benefit of the doubt. That's always kind of been like the dividing line when we ref the games, you know?
And give the attacker the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
But Trusty, you know, let's really be honest. He was at fault for the penalty, and because he left his leg out late, which I saw, and then he did it again, fouling Legette.
Well, you're talking about on the penalty, Trusty was in front of him, and then Wagner came in from behind with the leg out. Yeah,
His leg was already, you know, when you extend your leg out, like when I was coaching, like, you extend your leg out like that, you're not really, you know, sort of straining it. You're just sort of throwing your leg out there. You're essentially asking someone to come and run into it, and you're gonna hurt yourself.
Yeah,
it was kind of the same move he did on Legette. Like in the 50th or whatever minute, to where he got the red card, you know, got the second yellow. But he wasn't having a good night. And to be honest with you, this is the first time I'm even talking about Trusty.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know how good he is, how well he's played, but certainly he was at fault on both of these goals. So you can see where there's a weakness there. Wagner, I think, backing into, the situation, let's say, backing into to Zlatan, I thought, well, you know, that's not going to be a good recipe. But you're backing in. Trusty's backing forward, his leg out, like, you know, he's like a dog peeing, sort of. And then you got Zlatan in the middle. That fight is always going to be won by Zlatan.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and then you got the bloody VAR, which I hate. But, you know, you can't. After the ref looks at it, he's like, he still made a decision. If it was not given without VAR, I'd have been like, oh, well, that, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
It was given with VAR. He made a choice. There's days where I hate VAR and there's days where I love it, you know?
Well, that's a natural segue. And actually, before I do that natural segue, I'm going to ask you if you have any final thoughts on the Union Galaxy game before I do that pivot.
I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of disappointed in the Union because I've become, you know, I'm like the unofficial fan of the Union because of our days on WWDB AM 860 in the Philadelphia area.
Yep.
I'm an unofficial fan. But to me, and I'm hoping that it's just the fanboy in me saying these guys didn't come out here to play. If they didn't come out here to play, then you really did a disservice. And if you're getting calls that aren't going your way, the Bosnia-Herzegovina number six, and I forget his name right now.
Medunjanin.
You can't be a loudmouth with the referee. Referee calls the penalty and you're still loud. You can't do that. Again, LA Galaxy players do it, LAFC players do it, a lot of players. You can't do that. And I think you can't let Alejandro Bedoya just be the guy that is around the, that does everything for the back line. He was everywhere and he was saving the blushes for Andre Blake, I think, at this point. And he's doing too much work. So the back line is a problem. The one thing I think a lot of people missed watching the game, and I was actually right there on the other side of the pitch when it happened, the supporters group of the LA Galaxy, when Bedoya was taking a corner kick, started shouting, what were they shouting? They were shouting, oh God, hold on. It was kind of funny at the time, but I didn't think it was very nice. US reject or something like that. US reject, like okay. This.
Yeah.
And it affected him enough to, as he ran away, he like put his hand up and gave him the finger.
No, I'm not surprised, yeah.
He certainly wears his passion on the sleeve. So I know there was one guy who was like, he wasn't taking any, you know, he wasn't holding anything back. He left everything on the pitch.
Yeah.
Respect Bedoya, but he's working way too hard. It's almost like he wants to be a midfield player as well as a defender, and he's doing everyone's job.
I know. He can't paper over all the cracks. You know, it's tough. Yeah. You can be a glue guy to a certain extent, but if all you're doing is putting out fires, then you got to ask questions about everybody else on the team.
And,
you know,
and I got to tell you, I think he can be that special player that can be, you know, can take, you know, like sort of that sort of like Dutch style of football where he can go and he can be the one guy and they can sort of cover him. But they weren't doing it, and I think that was really easy to see. And, you know, Ibrahimovic and Alessandrini and Leggett, they really did a number on the back lineup. So
it's a great Galaxy midfield. You know, okay. Corona and Dos Santos in there. That Galaxy midfield just, like, the Union midfield just struggled to, like, influence the game at all. I was really impressed by the way that LA moved the ball around.
I like the you know, people make fun of me when I use American terms, but there's like an American called, like, yeah, that guy's Johnny Hustle. I don't know where it comes from.
I don't use it.
People are like, what the hell does that mean? Like, do you even know what it is? So I don't know who. I think it was the play-by-play announcer for the Brewers used to use it. I think it was maybe where I picked it up. These guys are like Johnny Hustle. They're like, they don't let the ball like stop rolling, even if they give it away or something. So it was really fun to see this sort of. I don't know, this passion, this sort
they're
of...
They're just very active, yeah. I mean, like, they don't...
Last year.
There's a lot of purpose in the way they move the ball. There's not a lot of wasted movement. Yeah, it's really fun to watch.
And there's a new Costa Rican defender coming in that didn't get to play because of visa issues.
Gonzalez, yeah. He used to play for Columbus back in the day, right?
Columbus, but he, you know, straight out of Serie A.
Palermo.
I'm just thinking to myself, wow, you know, like, if once he's in there, then this whole back lineup might be, you know, even better, you know. So
yeah,
So and people are saying, by the way, that the LAFC or LA Galaxy are sort of the big contenders to be in, you know, in the on the Western Conference side in the MLS Cup final. You know, I like those odds.
I like it, man. It's been fun to watch him for sure. Okay, let me do this pivot here. Now that it's 5 minutes after the natural segue that I had, VAR. There's a lot of it in the Champions League these last 2 days, and I was only watching like casually, paying attention. But God, I mean, like today you had Sadio Mane VAR confirmed he was onside.
Yeah.
Llorente. VAR confirmed that he scored with his hip and not his hand. Of course, he had the big Aguero offside in that game, which was crazy. I mean, like in the Ajax game too, there's on Cristiano's goal, there was a VAR where they found out that the Ajax dude knocked over his own player.
Right.
So when you say sometimes you like VAR and sometimes you dislike VAR, explain yourself.
Okay, so when it goes in Liverpool's favor,
that's not...
I love it.
Oh, God.
When it goes against Liverpool, I hate it. Okay. Well, obviously that's the case, right? I mean, we're all fans.
Yeah.
Right. No, my thing is this.
Here's the question. Here's the thing, Simon.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
I think we can all agree that we all want to get calls correct. You know,
I would say we're on the same page.
Yeah, nobody's saying a lot of the complaints I hear about VAR, like, well, it disrupts the flow of the game and it takes emotional moments and it turns them into like nothing. Yeah. Well, like personally, I don't give a shit about that. Like, ask England fans if they worry about taking away the history of the hand of God versus getting that call correct, however many years ago it was. You know, and those four things that I just listed off the top of my head, VAR got all of them correct, right?
They got all of them correct. So let me tell you why I don't like it. And it won't be because, you know, Liverpool did this or LA did this or whatever, right? First off, I disagree with you that it takes momentum away from the game. It does actually take momentum. When you got to spend 4 or 5 minutes watching the butt of a referee looking into a black box on the side of the pitch and go, I wonder what he's doing, and the two commentators are talking out of their butt, and you're like, why am I watching this game? Why don't I just go and get a sandwich? Why is this on? Okay, so number one. And also the slippery slope to that is some enterprising young studio executives are going to say, you know, that is kind of stupid to watch a guy stick his, you know, head into this sort of curtain his black curtain to look at a screen.
Yeah.
All we see is his ass. Why don't we put some commercials in there while we wait? You know, that's down the road.
Well, yeah, but you know that now you're speaking as a true Brit, you know, whereas you've been over here long enough to know that for the American viewer, we're used to this shit.
Right.
So for me,
I don't want you to be used to it. I want you to be like 45 minutes of just like, what, just keep going, right? So that's what I don't like. Secondly, it takes away, or I don't know if it's secondly or thirdly or fourthly at this point, but it takes away the punditry that you and I do, okay? So you and I, we go way back, and we can talk about the nuances of football. We can talk about, you know, which position best suits a player, and we can talk about stuff that nobody else talks about in the podcast world, right? The minute you add VAR, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, every 25-cent, you know, quarterback goes, let's talk about VAR, which we're doing right now, by the way. Sorry,
yeah.
Folks.
Yeah.
You know? So right there, it just essentially levels the playing surface from literally amateur, you know, sort of like water cooler soccer fans to real guys who've studied the game for 25 years. All right, that's probably number two.
Yeah.
And the biggest one is that it really does. And by the way, the one I just told you, that's my biggest pet peeve. Like, any idiot that has a blog now can talk about VAR for 30 minutes. And he sounds like a genius. And then guys like me and you are like, do you want to talk about the actual game? And
yeah, it is a distraction. I can understand that. Yeah.
And the third biggest one is that the one thing that we never, ever, ever thought in our lives, when I was a kid playing, I never thought once that 20, 30, 40 years from now, right now, whatever year we're in right now, that we are making superstars out of referees. Suddenly, the pages of every blog, whatever, is filled with referees' names rather than soccer players' names. I don't need that crap, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Now, on the good side, yes, things are called. And the price we pay for proper calls are the three things I just mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I guess then it's just a measure, an exercise of what you're willing to live with in order to achieve that, you know? And to me, I personally, like, as an American who grew up watching, you know, baseball and football, where every 5 minutes there's a commercial and they shove a Bud Light commercial down your throat, and then you got to hear about the next hottest potato chip on the market or whatever other American consumerism bullshit you have to hear about. I'm used to it, but I can understand the reaction from other people. I think more than anything, as I wrestle with it, I say I'm willing to live with all that bullshit if that's what it takes to get it right, you know?
And listen, 30, no, I'm not sure, how old am I now? Okay, so 50, 60 years now, I might be dead, and and two generations of soccer fans will have lived through it, and they'll be like, what was the big deal? You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, true,
so,
true.
But they won't, but there'll really never be any, you know, any sort of starry-eyed pub talkers talking about the hand of God or something, right? Because it'll be out of the sort of the it'll never happen again.
Yeah, yeah.
There won't be that sort of camaraderie in, like, remember that time in 1982 or 86, this happening, oh, yeah, no VAR. So that's gone. That whole sort of...
Well, what we'll talk about...
Will never be gone. Will never happen again.
What we'll talk about instead at the pubs is, would be like, you remember in 2019 when, you know, Pierluigi Collina or whatever other referee screwed up that VAR call. We'll still be talking about this. We'll be talking about the same, like, bogus things, but it'll just be VAR,
be,
you know,
VAR
specific.
you know,
I don't know. I get it. I understand when baseball fans say, for example, that they like the traditions of the game and they like how it is, but, you know, at the same time, I'm looking at, like, having a designated hitter in one league and not having it in the other league, and it just seems common sense to me to make things as fair on the playing field as possible. And if that interrupts some stuff in other areas, I'm willing to live with it. But
I'll tell you, this is something that I actually discussed. Can I name drop here?
Yeah, of course.
Name drop?
Yeah.
So when Alexi Lalas was on my show, we discussed this couple of, like, when it first came out, you know, and I said, you know, what's going to happen is, you know, the good thing about it is that those guys who dive and cheat, okay,
mm-hmm.
they'll stop doing that. They'll
yeah.
know that VAR is there. So all the stuff that I hate about football, which is the diving and the cheating, that's going to mostly be eradicated. And I think later on in the episode or in the show, I think either it was me or Alexi said, yeah, but they'll just figure out another way to cheat.
Yeah, right. They'll find a way
yeah.
to get around
like,
it.
Oh,
you know.
Thanks very much. I was trying to think of a good thing to say, but
survive and adapt, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, I won't keep you much longer, Simon, but I want to talk about this was actually a topic that I had that I was going to discuss after the interview, but I was like, what the hell, I'm gonna ask Simon about it because he'd be
good.
I'm already
here. What's going on?
So yeah. The Athletic, which is a popular website that's been around for 2 years now, behind a paywall, beefed up their soccer coverage. They hired a couple more full-time people. I think they made six full-time hires over the last week and a half. But as a result, they slashed some of their local coverage. So freelancers like Matt DeGeorge, Dave Zeitlin was writing for Philadelphia stuff as well. Philly and Columbus lost their local freelancers. The Athletic instead picked up a couple full-timers. So I'm interested in what you think about. I think this is interesting because, of course, you know, I thought Matt and Dave did great work here in Philadelphia. I thought the local people did as well. But I also am a person who says, wow, there are no full-time soccer jobs out there. Are we willing to sacrifice freelance gigs at the local level to try to get people full-time stuff with a decent salary and with benefits?
Man, that's a kind of a rigged question, Kevin.
Well, it's two different models, is it not?
Having a freelance guy getting paid, what's a freelance guy get paid these days? Because I stopped writing because when I first started writing about soccer, can I? I don't want to sound like a kind of a, you know, dick and say, you know, what I was getting paid, but let's say I was getting paid $150 for like literally writing crap, right?
Yeah.
So 3 years ago, because there were so many quote-unquote soccer experts in the world, in America, the last time I got paid to write an article, I got paid $20 minus the fee that PayPal takes.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, and then you know all these guys out there and gals out there that are working for free. So
yeah.
To me, you know, when you say, are you willing to give up freelance jobs? The freelance job is literally the guy in the back of the parade with the broom, and in front of him is a bunch of elephants. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the job. So if some big wig is now getting 50, 60 grand a year writing three articles a day, and then he's got a side job somewhere else making 50 grand, then I guess what I would tell that person is, watch, you know, always look behind you because there's always someone out there who can do your job just as good and will probably take over whenever you slip.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to me because, you know, 99.9% of people who write about soccer in this country, they are either freelancers who have other gigs. You know, like for me, I was working at Channel 3, I was reffing games. I was writing for the union on the side. I'd say maybe like 12% of my annual income came from covering the union. And the other 80% was CBS, and the other like whatever percent was from other jobs. But I'm trying to think of like how we move it forward. Like I'm happy on one hand that we've created full-time gigs, but yeah. I don't know if it's better to have 5 full-time gigs for 5 people or if it's better to have 10 part-time gigs for 10 people. I don't know what serves the fan better. I don't know what results in the better coverage. I know it's probably cheaper to have 10 people working, you know, $50 an article or like $200, $300, $400 a month or something like that. But I don't know if taking one step back and going with 5 full-time people can ultimately lead to 10 full-time people, you know?
Well, the problem is, who are these 5 full, you know, imaginary full-time people? Are they complete idiots who just have a name for themselves? You know? So, for example, let me just tell, how long have you been doing soccer now, Kevin, just to your own horn? How long have you been doing it?
9 years.
9 years. So I've been doing it for 14 years, just my podcast,
mm-hmm.
and then I got to go back to 1999 to do my soccer thing, and I'm the guy that gave up a really good job in banking to do soccer full-time,
yeah.
where I worked for every bloody league in the, you know, in America, plus corporate guys and so on and so forth. So are we getting some guy, some stale, redundant guy that doesn't know anything about soccer getting paid $50,000 a year? Or are we getting a guy that's got some chops and like you that can do it and be entertaining and can be thoughtful and can be insightful? That's, I think, the problem. We look at the soccer guys on TV. They're not insightful. They're not entertaining. They're not funny. They are not at all what I want to watch. Now, the writers I read, are they insightful? Well, to me, they're not. To most of the people I know, they're not. So the idea is, let's get 5 full-time guys that are different. They're not cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
They can educate. They can entertain. They can incite. Hell yes, they can go ahead and bring revenue in. And let's do that. Now, once we figure out that these 4 out of the 5 people suck and they're no good, we're not afraid to get rid of them and bring 4 new guys in to do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's how it should be. Now, if you ask me who my favorite soccer writer is or who my favorite soccer pundit is, it's literally been the same guy for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, and it's Kevin Kincaid.
You know? Oh, stop.
So step up, America.
So let me ask you that. Here's the last question for you, and it's the same topic, but let me explain it in this way. So I'll use your geographic region to explain it, okay? You live in Los Angeles. You live in Pasadena. So say you have a really good freelancer who covers the Los Angeles Galaxy. You really like this person. You also have a really good freelancer in San Diego, okay? And you like them, and they do a good job also.
Yeah.
The employer says, we're going to get rid of the Los Angeles guy. We're going to make the San Diego guy full-time, and the San Diego guy is also going to cover L.A.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
You like both of those guys, and you're happy for the guy who got hired full-time, but at the same time, you kind of feel bad for the freelancer in L.A. too.
Necessarily think so. Let me get this sort of really clear, okay? I don't necessarily think that if you just because you live in a certain area that you cannot be an expert in a team in another area, okay? So, for example, I don't believe that guy in San Diego cannot be in tune and in touch and with, you know, in the community in Los Angeles. He can do a lot of traveling, and he could be very, very well known and very well versed in both those communities. However, okay, again, folks, remember what I said before. I believe that you can be a guy that can be from LA and be a Kansas City guy, you know, and fly back and forth. Just remember that. I don't want any letters or emails on that. But I really do believe that with that, it is very beneficial for someone to be part of the community that the team is at. So if you're from, you know, L.A., that you pretty much know what's going on in L.A. Like, I know what's pretty much going on in L.A. better than pretty much anyone in L.A. If you ask me what's going on in San Diego, well, maybe not as much. So I think that they're both needed. The second criteria, the second is ideal, having two people. But if you have to, I think it can be done.
Yeah, it's a good answer. I think, and the reason I gave you that example was because I think Union fans are kind of peeved by the idea that they would get rid of our local guys and just pay us off the Philadelphia market to somebody from New York. You know what I mean? Because it's like if, you know, you roll your eyes, you're like, oh, New York again trumps everything Philadelphia. So maybe that's just specific to us. But I think that's
it
why people
think. It is specific, because you have to go back. Remember when I was we're on radio together, and yeah, you guys were all talking about how you hate New York.
Yeah.
I'm like, guys, you only had two matches. How much hate is it? You might hate the city, but you've never played the team more than twice.
Well, it's just more of the idea. I think I
totally understand it, Kevin. I totally.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, if someone came up to you and went, "Hey, Kevin, we're replacing you with a guy from New York," I'd be like, "No one is as Philadelphia as Kevin Kincaid."
You're goddamn
no
right.
Reason.
Yeah, exactly.
No reason. So yeah, I agree with you.
Simon, your guys, Liverpool, Barcelona.
Yeah, I love it.
I'll tell you what. I don't have a rooting interest. Obviously, I grew up on this continent. I did not just pick a European team just for the hell of it. But I would be fine with. I don't want Barcelona to win. I think I'd like to see Liverpool. I'd like to see Liverpool and Ajax, I think, in the finals.
Well, I would listen. I wouldn't mind that either. As a fan of Liverpool, as a guy that, and I honestly think Liverpool can beat Barcelona. I don't think Barcelona. First off, number one, I'll just say this so it's on record. I think Pep Guardiola is now going to feel a bit of pressure, and who knows? I really think that maybe in the Premiership, he's going to do something a bit weird and wacky, and maybe Liverpool's going to win the Premiership as well. Now, I think Liverpool can beat Barcelona. I don't think Barcelona is the amazing Barcelona of Barcelona's of years past.
I agree.
I think a team that like Liverpool with a defender like Van Dijk and the three scoring prowesses, I think can very well beat them, because if you can isolate the key players in Barcelona for 90 minutes, which not many teams have done, you've got to win. You've got to win there, and I think Liverpool have the players that will do that. So I'm not very nervous about, you know, a Barcelona-Liverpool match. I'm really, you know, and it's not just me being a fan. I think it can be done. Now, Tottenham, you know, against Ajax, I'm blowing it, like, out the water. I'm like, I don't know. It could Tottenham could bottle it. Ajax could do something. Tottenham could just absolutely stun.
Yeah.
It could be a two English team final. I don't think UEFA wants that, so who knows? You look for some funny stuff, you know, going on there. But yeah, Liverpool, you know, they got hodged out of a trophy against Real Madrid. It was not good if you're a Liverpool fan to see your best player being absolutely mauled and destroyed by a very hacky, bastardly Real Madrid defender. This time around, I don't think it's going to be that bad, you know, in Spain. And I think Liverpool do deserve it, but again, people will disagree with me. But it can be done. I think this team has the right personnel to do it.
Well, if there's any discrepancies with any Liverpool players, we'll just go to VAR on that, all right?
Yeah, we'll do it. You know, to me, here's what I haven't seen in any stadium. Some guy in like a Liverpool outfit or an LAFC outfit or whatever with a big television on his head coming out like, "Hey, I'm VAR man," you know, like just to mock it. Like, where are these clever sort of fans that, you know, like.
I'll leave you with this one. The funniest thing that I started seeing like at pickup games and whatnot is that now all the kids start to do the VAR symbol with their hands.
Well, I've seen something a little bit different, which kind of annoys me. And Dozy Altador does this. I've seen kids essentially go down quicker in the box, and then go like to the ref, "Come on, man, come on," and then say like VAR. Well, whereas before it's like, they try to stay on their feet as kids. So they've been influenced. The influence is already there.
Yeah. Well, it's a new, it's a brave new world for the.
It makes me sound like an old fuddy-duddy.
I know, and I'm only 34, so you know.
I'm only 28. What's going on?
I know we both feel old. Simon Allen, always a pleasure, man. Appreciate you coming on short notice and jumping on with us. It's SimonAllenSoccer.com. Your Twitter handle is still Dalai Lama Soccer, yes?
It is. Kevin, thank you. Kevin, listen, I'm not blowing smoke up your butt when I say you're the only guy I listen to. You're the best in the business. You're like the fairest guy I talk to. You're a pro. You know how to handle a show. And I hope you keep doing it for a long, long time. And anytime you need someone to come on late notice, let me know, because it's always a pleasure.
All right, well, listen, if Liverpool wins the Champions League and my newborn daughter is asleep, I'll get you back on the show and we'll do it, all right?
Okay, you got it. Deal.
All right, it's time for your questions, your comments, and your concerns. There weren't a lot of them this week. Maybe people just didn't have a lot of juice after that loss. But Mike always has juice. The three Union wins come from a depleted Crew side, a questionable expansion side, and a young Dallas side. The three Union losses are to teams shaping up to be elite teams in MLS. The tie was against elite talent that is floundering. Are the Union nothing more than middle of the road? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think when you looked at the schedule, everybody said, okay, they're probably going to lose to Kansas City, probably going to lose to Toronto. Everybody thought Atlanta was going to be a loss, and it ended up being a draw. Yeah, Dallas was young, but that was a nice win. It was a nice come from behind win. Columbus did, yeah, they were missing players, but they still had good players on the field, even though it was a home game. I don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody was going into this season saying that the Union are more than a middle of the road team. I think that's kind of what we expected, right? Anywhere from fifth to seventh, I think, was where most people had them. So, no, I mean, I think they've won the games that you probably expect them to win and lost the games that expected them to lose. You know, I think it's probably playing out exactly how we thought it would at this point. There's a big, long discussion here between the two of them. Union Report says, I'm tired of hearing all of this trashing of Ray Gattis while praising of Keegan Rosenberry. Newsflash, Rosenberry is not that much better, if any. Well, yeah, I mean, they're different players, too. Keegan has not been that good in Colorado this year. Ray Gattis has been Ray Gattis, you know, steady, if unspectacular. I just think that Keegan was a good fit for this team because of his ability to get high and possess the ball and knock the ball around, and you know, some of the triangles they played with him and Dochkal and Bedoya and Madunian in last year. Whereas Ray is just Ray is Ray. You know, I think everybody knows how I feel about Ray Gattis as a player. I'm not anti Ray. I just, like, he's the kind of player that if you're looking to take this franchise to the next level, he can't be your all-time minutes leader and all-time appearances leader, you know, because he's just an average to maybe above average kind of player, a steady player. You know, if you want to take the next step, guys like Ray Gattis have to be upgraded. So it's not me saying anything negative about Ray. It's about, you know, where do you view this franchise until do you want to get it to the next level? Then maybe the guy who's been there for 8 years and has had the most minutes and the most appearances and whatnot, who's just a steady, serviceable fullback, maybe you have to get a better player in here. Something to think about. Mitch says Ryan has looked good for at right back for Steel, Issa Ryan. However, he's a natural winger. How difficult is it to transition from offense to defense? I recall Ryan Richter making a similar transition. How difficult is it to transition from offense to defense? I think it's hard. I think it's harder to go from offense to defense than defense to offense. Because I think when you spend a lot of time playing defense first, you know, you learn a lot about structure and shape. And the importance of risk taking or lack thereof, you know, which is to say, like, if I'm a center back or a left back and I'm, you know, lunge at somebody or I go to ground on a slide tackle when I don't have to, or if I gamble on a certain play, it might bite me in the ass, you know, because a guy might take the ball into open space and he might score. Whereas offensive players, you know, you can be a little bit more creative and take some risks. Marco Fabian can try some harder passes to try to unlock a defense. You know, you can make a few more runs forward and not have to worry about being out of position. You know, I think it's for defenders who become attackers, you bring that concept of shape and responsibility with you to offense, where I think offensive players have to learn that a little bit more. When they come back to defense, you know, of course, the modern day fullback is almost as much of an attacking piece as a defensive piece on a lot of teams. So it depends how teams want to use them also. And that answer might sound biased as a guy who's played, you know, I've played center back and defensive mid like my entire life. But yeah, I know that if I go play midfield, I can do things that I might not be able to do as a defender. So I think there's some concepts, some macro level kind of approaches to the game that are just different. Joe says, if you order one bourbon, one scotch, and one beer, in which order do you drink them? God, well, you're not supposed to do, what's the saying? You're not supposed to do beer before liquor, or you're not supposed to do liquor before beer. Which one is it? God, I don't know. It makes me want to barf just thinking about it. All the bad nights that I've had, and there really have not been a lot of them, I don't like, you know, throw up or get hungover or whatever that often, but it's always when you're mixing and matching, you know? It's like a whiskey and then like an IPA or something. Ugh. And he says also, which happens first, Ray Gattis 35-yard golazo or Ray Gattis laying someone out on the pitch with a right cross? Ray will never harm anybody. He's like the nicest guy on the planet. Ray Gattis, 35. Here's the thing. You know that when Ray finally scores his first MLS goal, it's going to be like some ridiculous thing, right? You know, he'll catch like a 37-yarder from the corner of the box or like some ridiculous header or something like that. You know, as Dave Zeitlin would say, he's due, like Andrew Winger. Scott Eric says, who do you think will be in the starting 11 this weekend? Well, Fabian's not in it. No, Trusty's not in it. Makes things easier, doesn't it? I feel like that we were having this conversation the last couple podcasts. You know, how do you fit Aronson in there? How do you fit Fabian in there? How do you fit Montero in there? Montero, I thought, was all right the other night. You know, it's a hard game, too, when that midfield is just bossing you. When you go out there and your first MLS start is against that Galaxy team, it's got a lot of good midfielders. You know, when you look at his heat map, when you looked at Montero's heat map after the game, he was a little bit deeper than I thought he would be. And even in the build-up play, too, you saw that he liked to drop back and get on the ball, and he would play pretty close to Madunian. I don't know if there's redundancy there. I don't know if there's the overlap in the skill sets at all. But he seemed to want to do some of the same things that Harris likes to do. So the build-up play looked a little bit different with Montero in there as a shuttler. I don't know if that was him trying to find the game, trying to get on the ball a little bit more in a game where they didn't have a lot of possession. So I'd be interested to see how he does playing at home. But, yeah, I mean, I you know, Corey Burke and Fafa Pico just aren't, you know, they got to get more out of their forwards. And, you know, I think David Akam has been the most effective out of all of them, at least scoring goals, right? So I'd like to see Akam up there. I guess Akam and Burke, Akam and Pico. I don't know. If Sergio Santos is healthy, I want to see him. I want to see, if you gave me those four guys, I think right now I want to see Akam and I want to see Santos up top. Not necessarily that pairing, but to those two guys, I think I'm most intrigued about. I think could be the most effective right now, considering the form of Akam and how he's looked earlier in the year. And Santos, just because you paid $500,000 for him, so I want to see what he's got. So I'd go say like for example, Akam and whoever, and then it's gonna be Aronson. Then you have Montero and Bedoya on either side. Madunian in. Mark McKenzie comes in for Austin Trusty. I don't think anything else changes. You know. As Baxter sits on the microphone cable right here. I forgot to introduce him again. I've done a poor job of that lately. Mike says, with Ray's weakest showing yet in LA, what will it take to see Mbizo on the pitch? I don't know. I guess them watching him play for Steel and just believing in him. You know, I mean, they said at the beginning of the year that quote from Ernst that said, you know, we believe in him. If you believe in him, then it's time to put him on the field, you know. Ray is Ray, you know. He was pretty good last year, then, you know, had disappointing playoff games, and he was a big disappointment in the Open Cup final. So I think we know where we're at with Ray Gattis at this point. Kevin says, I can't wait to see Ray Gattis racking up the assists while crossing to Lewandowski this summer. I know it's going to be crazy, right? It's going to be a new era of Union soccer. Andrew says, even though I try to be objective, it seems like the Union repeatedly get killed by the refs. Is there anything to this, or am I just an unrepentant homer? I don't know if it's that the Union get killed by the refs or that the other team just gets the benefit of the doubt, you know, because they have the stars and whatnot, you know, Zlatan, Michael Bradley. You know, the Union don't have that. So I don't know if it's so much like an anti-Union thing as it's like a pro other teams thing. Does that make sense? As I get pinged on Slack right there. Sorry about that. I was saying to Simon, I think with the Zlatan thing, because he's so big and he doesn't have to like really go up that high to get over top of a defender, but I still think he's impeding Trusty's ability to jump a little bit. I think Austin could have done a lot better job by trying to just, and that was a tricky play too, because the defense got sucked in. There were a couple weird 50-50 balls and some bounces that went in their favor, and Ray Gattis had to step up on Alessandrini, I think, to prevent him from taking a shot. And that's why Skelvic was wide open on the left there. And so Trusty's trying to cycle back and find a body, find where Zlatan is. It wasn't the easiest play in the world. Those are hard. You know, when you're center back and the ball sort of dinked over your head like that and you're trying to track backwards, it's hard to get leaping power when you're moving backwards like that, you know? And then for him to run into Zlatan, who's bigger than him and who's going to get the call, you know, and who can see the ball and is facing the ball and is looking forward and jumps early. Zlatan timed that perfectly too. It's just hard to blow the whistle there. I do think Zlatan probably impeded him a little bit. He didn't do a full extension. I think that's probably why they didn't call it. But to answer the question, I don't know if it's so much like anti-Union as it is like pro other stuff. And you could point to CJ Sapong maybe and say he's not a superstar. But I don't think that's a specific to the Union kind of thing. Like I wouldn't see Colorado getting any calls over the Union. You know what I mean? It's like the haves and the have nots of MLS. Kyle says, what the fuck happened in the Man City game? I am lost. That's crazy, man. That's one of the craziest games I've ever seen. We haven't talked Champions League or European soccer, or like anything non-Union on the show in a while, but, that's some damn good action, man. I know. My boy Rick McGovern is very happy with Ajax getting through. I'm happy for him. I'm not anti-Ajax. I want everybody to know that I'm not anti-Ajax. I think because of comments I made about Ajax on this podcast back in the day, people think I'm anti-Ajax. That's not the case. I think my complaints were, like, when you go back to the 2017 Europa League final, for example, when they got beat by Manchester United, you know, you had one faction of people, a large vocal faction of people who are saying, well, Ajax, you know, tries to do it the right way and play the right way. They try to play free-flowing soccer. They put kids on the field. They promote from within. They, you know, do things correctly with youth. Okay, which is fine. I don't disagree with that. But I watched, you know, Mourinho go out with the more expensive team and park the bus. And everybody's whining about anti-football and negative bullshit and stuff like that. And so be it. But Man United won 2-0. So again, I think I have this problem with people who tell me that certain teams are doing things quote unquote the right way or the wrong way or whatever. Like I've said a million times on here before, I don't think just because Barcelona plays tiki taka or whatever that's the only way to play the game. You know, there is some beauty in the way that Stoke City would lump the ball forward, and, you know, hit 2 6-foot-5 strikers and just sort of muscle their way to wins. Or Rory Delap throwing the ball 40 yards in from the sideline. Like I just don't like people telling me that there's only one, that there's one best way to do things or one proper way to do things. You know, there's different play styles. There's different approaches to development and roster building. You know, I've always said that, you know, it's great to have, you know, 19 and 20 year olds on the field, but you know, it doesn't, 19 and 20 year olds aren't automatically any better than 35 year olds. You know, like, would Ajax have played Ryan Giggs in 2009? Of course they would have, because he's a good player. And you see Ajax has players like Lasse Schöne and Daley Blind, you know, who are older. You know, so obviously they have a little bit of that blend. But I don't know. I just don't like people, like, telling me what the right way to do things is. And plus, you could argue that Ajax, you know, Ajax's model, instead of being a selling club, instead of selling off this best talent over and over again, instead of selling, like, Sanchez and Eriksen and the four dudes that they sold to Tottenham or whatever, keep him. You know, keep him, you know, and make a run at the Champions League, kind of maybe like they're doing now or next year. So I don't know. That's the only thing. I just don't like this automatic default where it's like Ajax is the smaller – Ajax is not really the smaller team. They play in a smaller league, but they've been a power for many, many years, you know. But it, I guess in all this, it just makes me want to have a European Super League, you know, where it's like all the best teams in like a regular Champions League every year with the biggest clubs. I don't know how feasible that is, but I would like to see Ajax play the big teams over and over again. And because I love their philosophy and their style, I don't want to see them be a selling club. You know what I mean? I don't want to see them continually just get to like quarters and semis and finals and then sell off their best players to the Manchester Uniteds and Tottenhams and PSGs or whatever of the world. You know what I mean? So I think that's where I wrestle with it a little bit. One final question. Sorry, I lost it on my phone here. Is Przybylko worth a shot at striker? Jim mentioned him in press conference today. Yeah, I mean, I you know, if Burke and Pico aren't really doing anything for you, why not? I mean, some of the goals he scored for Steele weren't entirely impressive. There's one goofy fast break. And there's another that bounced to him that he put back on goal. But yeah, I don't know, man. He's scoring goals, which is more than you can say for Burke and Pico, right? So I don't, at what point is it where you look at their XG and you're like, well, he's still doing a lot of good things. You know, how much do you weigh that versus guys who are actually putting the ball in the back of the net? So I mean, there are worse things in the world. All right, it's almost an hour then. Thanks, everybody, for listening to episode number 76, I think. Baxter's here. He says hello. And listen, unless my wife is like late on going into labor, this is probably going to be the last one before the kid comes. So it'll probably be like 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever until the next podcast. And yeah, we'd like to do the live podcast. Hopefully we might be hooking that up with the Larimer, just waiting to hear back from those guys. And yeah, into the summer, more unit stuff, try to get that live thing going. But as always, thanks again for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time.